By the way, that's Stevie Wonder singing a song inspired by Bob Marley, and Ziggy Marley, a friend of the radio station here, KPFK, is in South Africa, and we're trying to arrange getting word from Ziggy down in South Africa on an upcoming installment of The People's Game. And we are in the home stretch of the 2010 World Cup soccer tournament. Today's game, much anticipated between Spain and Germany, has completed the pairing for the final as Spain defeated Germany 1-0, and they'll be facing Holland in the finals on Sunday. This is The People's Game. I am Alan Minsky.
I'm Jennifer Doyle.
Pablo Mirales.
Tony Presedo.
The first thing I just want to say is, while Pablo, you're wearing a very beautiful Barcelona shirt, Jennifer is totally decked out in the Spanish national side. And we don't always wear soccer uniforms, as we, but Jennifer's off to a game.
Right after this show, I'm jumping in my car, and I am driving down to one of my favorite fields in L.A. to join friends in a pickup game.
Awesome.
Well, we're going to talk about a number of things over the course of today's show. We're going to talk a little bit about something that Jennifer noticed on conservative Wikipedia. What is it called again?
I think it's called Conservapedia.
Oh, boy. Conservapedia. Mm. We're going to talk about soccer and socialism a little bit. There's been quite a discussion going on about the relationship between the two in the British press. We'll talk about that. We'll talk in a little bit about Johan Cruyff. But before that, we'll talk about what Johan Cruyff, the two teams that in the tournament that he really has a sort of, they're in his lineage, Holland and Spain, and today Spain, in their display of total football, I thought fully dominated Germany. What did you think about it, Jennifer?
The game today was a study in how it's done. I was wondering how people who are not so familiar with the sport reacted to the game, because for me, It was a really interesting game in terms of strategy, in terms of the relationship between the players, the processes of the teams, and basically both teams' aggressive efforts to prevent the other side from playing their game. And, Germany has been playing some of the most beautiful football of the tournament, as has been said over and over again. Spain's been a bit underachieving and not living up to their reputation for playing the kind of game that Germany's been playing. But what the Spanish team, and especially the defenders in the midfield, they really showed us how to basically shut that down. And I was really moved. I love Puyol, so I was also happy to see him score. My heart goes to the defensive side of the game, and I love it when you see somebody like him just take control and actually win the game for the team. It was a really interesting game, and I'm kind of happy that Spain is through now.
I found it interesting comparing yesterday's semifinal to today's, because in yesterday's it was really forward thinking. The passes were really positive. There was an idea that each team seemed to have this feeling that they could score every time they went up the field. Mm-hmm. And today's game was much more like a chess match. And only one player was a master. Spain just possessed the ball. They moved the ball. It almost looked like they weren't running at some points. They were so using their two-touch style so effectively. And even though everybody in the world should know this by now, that this is what Spain does, Germany looked like they didn't know what to do with it, you know?
Well, after watching Spain struggle to get to today's game, they finally did what everyone thought they'd do from the beginning, and that is impose their style effectively and fully. And that's what they did to the Germans. And you're right, Pablo. Like, I think there was something in the Germans, whether it was a psychological thing or fear or uncertainty, where they let that be imposed on them right from the first minute of the game.
Yeah, It looked like a really frustrating game for the German players. I saw circulating around the Twitter feeds the word passanaccio, right, instead of the sort of clamping down, sort of deadening of the game that's associated with a certain style of Italian defending. Passanaccio would be playing off of that, moving the ball so quickly that people don't have a chance to actually get their foot on it. So it's a very, very frustrating style of football to actually fight and try to enter, to get your foot in there and to impose yourself in that is really challenging. And I thought the German players looked a little scared. It had been commented actually by some of the commentators when they took the field, they looked nervous. I mean, and you can understand, the stakes are huge.
Yeah.
So.
You know, Xavi's just something else, isn't he? As the ball's coming to him, and almost always in a very controlled way, leaves his foot in an even more controlled way with even greater intention almost all the time. But, you know, coming to him, he is looking around at the field and just in a flash goes down, gets the ball, grabs it, and then keeps looking out.
What I love about
amazing player.
In Njabi, you never know what direction he's going to make his first touch. Mm. If you anticipate he's going to always turn left or he's going to turn in general or he's going to go backwards, he seems to always do the exact opposite and the defender's always left. And he suddenly has these 2 or 3 yards open that he didn't have before even the ball was passed.
You know, I also was impressed, by the way, with both him and Iniesta. You know, you figure they must be some kind of – I mean, these guys are tiny. Aren't they some kind of defensive liability? They close down so fast.
Yeah.
I mean, the ball is now on a German player's foot. Well, it's still mine, you know, and they just close down so fast.
Well, you can't overlook the fact that they both play together in Barcelona, and they probably have a sort of a sixth sense of how to work together. And if one goes to the ball, the other one will naturally seems to pull back and fill the space behind. And it's just fun to watch. In my opinion, I loved watching these two play.
And let's not forget Busquets, who gets that ball and hands it off to those guys every single time. And he's a great holding midfielder that I think a lot of people didn't know anything about before the tournament. I mean, obviously watching Barcelona, I knew who he was. But to see him sort of come into his own and do the dirty work that I think Senna was doing for them in the Euros before he got hurt, and now he wasn't even called up to play. But you know, that was important pickup too.
I actually thought Capo Villa had a good game today.
Yeah, he did.
He'd been unimpressive previously in some matches, and David Villa too. Even though he didn't score today, again, such spark, you know. And such creativity.
I'm having one of these moments that happen to me every now and again because as listeners, you know, you might not know this about me, but I'm not known for being interested in soccer. People who know me are really shocked that I can have these kinds of conversations with people. And I actually kind of suspect this might be true of a couple people at this table where it's been sort of like a closeted passion for us. And here we are, you know, slicing and dicing this game from all these weird little angles and, you know, getting to show, you know, I have been watching, how many games have we watched at this point?
It's about 60
games?
60 games. 61st will be the third place game. 62 will be the final.
60 game,
We've watched that many games.
Wow.
I've watched about all of them,
I think I have.
I think I've watched all of them.
Well, this, by the way, let me just say this now because I was going to say at the end of the show, which brings us to this other point here, which is that apparently there's a group organizing here in Southern California to call for and I think this could go global and viral. I hope it does. That in 2014, there's just a month-long global holiday because so many people are watching all these games and they're exhausting themselves. So I just say, you know, I think this is a great thing. Complete global holiday in 2014 in Brazil. Just everybody in the world.
Well, I can guarantee you the Brazilians will take a holiday for the entire month.
Regardless of
exactly whether it's official or not.
And here's my thing. Essential services, the people continue doing what's necessary to keep the people fed.
Well, that's
and
good
the electricity.
To know.
They get paid double. But they get paid double wage.
Alan, I hate to burst your bubble on this, but somebody has to work at the World Cup.
Double wage.
Yeah.
Double their wage. Everybody else just free global party, okay? And again, we'll see who's really for us and who's against us. And who the heck wouldn't be for that? Yeah. So okay, let's talk about Germany for a second. And I haven't actually gotten the feel of the German press. But I can only imagine that the sense of deflation must be intense because they were going for a full-on national party from what I could tell.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, I should have actually called down to the Goethe Institute, but I didn't have the heart to do it after the game. People were so, you know, high even around here who were following the team and the sense of joy that the team was bringing Germany and German fans. And I think they got pretty exposed today as not yet there.
Yeah.
Yeah, their youth was in evidence today and not really being able to – whatever Lowe gave them as a strategy going into the game, it obviously wasn't adjusted.
Right, and I think actually it was the first time you could see where they could have used Balak.
Mm. Oh, yeah, perhaps.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it was just one goal off of a corner kick. You know, I mean, it's
but like, it was 75% domination. It was like the field was tilted.
Actually,
you know?
they did the percentages after the game. It was pretty close in terms of possession.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, yeah.
Wasn't
yeah.
in the first half. That's
not
sure.
in the first half. I think it evened out though.
After the goal. Yeah, that would be true.
You know, I don't know. I mean, a game like this. One of the things that I like about it is, you know, with such a narrow margin, and especially off of a set piece like that, I mean, it was a bit of a defensive error, really.
Yeah.
But I thought it was one of few, you know, real openings that we saw in terms of an error, which created an opportunity for Spain.
Well, let's talk about the error that led to that goal. And this is something that I've, you know, from playing, I've noticed. A lot of these teams play zone defenses, where they crowd everyone in the small box. and they just cover a patch of grass.
Yeah.
Why can't people cover man to man? I mean that's obviously what happened there. He stood outside of the box.
Yeah.
Made a
Nobody
run
with, him.
With
yeah.
no one with him. Actually, the guy he headed it over another Spanish player
yeah.
to
right.
get there.
Piqué was ready to head it,
and he was unmarked as well. It's because they're playing a zone defense. They're all crowded up in the six yard box, and I really don't understand that. It never works.
I'm not sure it never works. I think Germany does fine generally
but
I think
I think Spain though they were diversifying their corners very well.
And they're playing it short a lot. Yeah.
Xavi, again, with that guy's skill to put the ball on a dime, that was very intentional,
yeah,
I think.
It was sweet.
Yeah.
So
they probably read what Germany was doing previously, and then, you know, this, however they order these things, but that was definitely a managed situation that the Spanish scored their goal on.
I just want to go back to, you know, and I want to defend the German team for a minute here, just because it was one error off of a set piece. And I know people, on the one hand, it's like, okay, I just don't think that Spain controlled the game so much that the result was a given.
I disagree. But here's the important thing, that this German team in the end was a little schizophrenic, and that's one thing that was kind of glossed over by most of the media, especially going into this game. You know, they had these three awesome four-goal blowout games against Australia, England, and then Argentina. But then their other two games previous to this game were – not exactly free-flowing, very I don't know what to say. They lost the one against Serbia, but okay, they had an early red card, which probably destroyed anything they were trying to do. But again, they were young, and they didn't seem to be able to get over that, to somehow find a solution to that problem. You know, maybe they're over-drilled. Maybe Lowe is a little too domineering in his tactics.
Well, I'm actually going to bring something up you mentioned in the car, Pablo, that one of the things that Spain did not do in today's game is that it is sort of like impose that killer instinct where just to finish the team off with a second or third goal, they didn't do it. And that's where that also drives your point home.
Yeah.
And that is that they dominated the game in possession, but they're just missing those two couple chances to really put the game away and just put them down.
But I also felt like they were never in danger of losing the game at all.
And then
you feel that until the ball goes in the net. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, this is one of the things about sports talk, and I feel like I can say this on KPFK and in this context.
Sure.
So one of the things about sports talk that just – I don't know. It drives me crazy. As I feel like we're rhetorically trying to master this situation that is almost completely unknowable.
Absolutely. It's an incredibly beautiful point.
Well, I want to bring it up partly because Tony and I watched last night this beautiful film by Douglas Gordon and Philippe Parano, 17 cameras trained on Zinedine Zidane as he played a match for Real Madrid. And one of the things that you see when you're watching this film, and we talked about it, we actually saw it with other players, was it's such a process and the game, and it's such an intricate process in which these people are – it's this, intricate network of relationships unfolding over 90 minutes. And you really can't know it without actually being there. And even when you're there, even Zidane in the middle of that game is one person in relation to – his 10 teammates and 11 other bodies on the field and the ball. It's such a complex and intricate game, and I think that's one of the things about its flow and its fluidity that's challenging, and perhaps challenging to American sports media. I think that's maybe one of the reasons why it's hard to find good calling of matches in American sports media and good analysis of the games, because the intricacies, you can't do a statistical read on soccer all convincing.
On emotions and moods and such. Yeah.
So the David Goldblatt interview we did yesterday, I really loved the way that he spoke about how unpredictable it is.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that this is a sport that just in a flash can turn against the entire flow. So you're absolutely correct. The game at 0-0 is on a knife's edge. As much as they do dominate the sort of sense of control of the game, one slip by a central defender closes in all alone, 1-0, the whole thing is transformed.
Yeah.
So, you're absolutely correct.
I mean, maybe youth comes into it insofar as maybe some of the players aren't visualizing winning it. You know, there's a great moment where Zidane says in the film, or there's subtitles that run across the bottom of the screen. It's his thoughts and thinking about the game. And he says, as a kid on the field, there was one moment where before the ball arrived to his feet, he could see what he was going to do and he knew he was going to score. And then he says, actually, that was the last time that ever happened to me. But I do think there's something really important to that, that visualization. That's a huge thing, actually, with very competitive athletes, is actually mentally imaging the thing that you want to have happen. You know, and I can see maybe with some younger players, when you're scared, you're just trying to get through the game without making a mistake. Mm-hmm. You know, it's really hard to imagine yourself actually you know, winning or exceeding yourself, you know. So I think that's, to me, that's something that's hard to actually, that's the hard thing to tap into in these kinds of conversations, is post-game analysis, where we want to actually claim that we understood what we watched. But I think the God's honest truth of it, in a good game, there's a certain element of mystery to it.
Right, but I do think, though, that it's tough to talk about not just the Spanish team, but the Barcelona side,
right,
that is the core of this team, and to not look at their system as the most ingenious contemporary example of a team that really tries to control a soccer game that is this very uncontrollable text. Now, we are going to be taking listener calls at 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. We really want to hear from you, hear your thoughts about the World Cup, the games on the field, also any political, cultural, economic, and social context you want to discuss as well. Now, I do want to bring up right now the guy I mentioned earlier, and I suppose I was not being entirely clear for people who don't know the history of late 20th century soccer. Johan Cruyff was one of the great stars in the history of the game, and really unique among the sort of highest pantheon of football players. He, even at the time of early age of his career, was involved in the very strategy and tactics of the team that he was a part of at Ajax in Amsterdam, and he is considered one of the authors of what's called Total Football. And he then, in his career, went from Ajax to FC Barcelona, where he played and later became the coach in 1988. In many respects, he's the intellectual author now of the two teams that have reached the finals, both of which have never won a World Cup. So the Total Football and pure adherence of Total Football, this style that really revolutionized soccer, and if people want to know sort of in capsule, it means that it used to be everybody was in their position, and Total Football, one thing is it brought out the idea that all 10 outfield players could shift positions, therefore all 10 outfield players were expected to have all the skills that defenders had and offensive players had and midfield players have. And that also involved a whole series of kind of intricate passing using the whole field, and you see it, of course, with Spain today playing in that way. And one of the paradoxes is, while Holland and the Netherlands and the Dutch soccer tradition have been very held on to Total Football as their national tradition, this year's team is considered to have somewhat varied from it.
Absolutely.
Whereas Spain is in many respects a purer manifestation of it.
I want to put pause for a second, because there will be listeners who don't know what you mean by Total Football.
Oh,
well,
I tried to just explain
it.
I still didn't get it.
Okay. There are 10 outfield players. It used to be traditionally the defenders developed defensive skills, kick the ball a long
so
way down the field.
It means that everybody can do everything.
Right.
Yeah.
That's,
right.
And a lot of shifting of positions. And we were commenting the other day that even this Dutch team, and one of the ways that that's not clear is you really have about four or five players outfield playing Total Football, but their defensive line is really playing
the
a defensive line.
The defensive five is actually very...
Just a defensive five, right?
Okay.
Right. And so Barcelona, FC Barcelona, and Pep Guardiola, the contemporary coach, is very much a direct, and he says as much, a direct disciple of Johan Cruyff. Right now we are joined by Arthur from Pasadena Online One. I do want to say there's a great article about Johan Cruyff you can find on the Wall Street Journal by Matthew Futterman. Just came out today, pointing out a lot of what I just said. Go ahead, Arthur from Pasadena. Welcome to the People's Game.
Well, thank you. I'd first like to start by saying how incredibly much your discussion has totally enlivened my concept and appreciation of football, which I sort of liked after my high school years, but mostly came to enjoy by watching my daughters play. And you're talking at a level far beyond me, but the thing that I think I'm trying to remember what I was calling about was that the mystery seems to be, and when people are discussing anything, and I learned this first as a journalist, later as a lawyer, the indefinable difficulty of avoiding the total merger of what we perceive at the moment versus how we describe it later after having found out the result.
Yeah.
Right.
And even among the most intellectually honest of us, and I appreciate so much how you folks are trying so hard to minimizes the overwash between one and the other. And thanks so much for that. I am baffled by constantly as an attorney by the difficulty of acquiring a true or close to true idea of what has occurred based on what people have seen and described, and bringing what you bring to with the marvelous analysis is just a real treat. Well, thanks.
Oh, thank you.
I've never envisioned anything like this on KPFK, and it's really fun. I used to, as a journalist, I worked with sports writers, and I always suspect that they were remembering things based on what they later would say they knew was going to happen. But
yeah.
Not like that at all.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, you see that a lot in sports writing.
Thank you very much.
It's so hard to... The brain works in so many ways at the same time.
Hey, thank you so much for joining us, Arthur, here on The People's Game from Pasadena. Thank you for your comment. The number here is 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. And right now we are joined by Tom in Encino. Tom in Encino, welcome to The People's Game.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah.
I'm on the freeway. Thanks, Mr. Minsky. I'd like to just... ask you regarding to your well-produced show about thinking globally and acting locally. I really respect the passion that you've all taken to this show, and that's really great. But what I'm interested in is why is it that a major global event that's happening in South Africa gets all this great coverage, but you have had absolutely zero interest in covering the local victory of the greatest basketball team in America, the Los Angeles Lakers. I mean, you at KPK had to go out of your way to outside of the riots, outside of the protesting and the street violence to ignore the buildup between the Lakers and the Celtics. And I want to know why that is, you know, something you'd laugh at, whereas you do all this minutia.
Oh, I'm laughing because I'm with you. I really think it's important that we weave conversations about local sports fan culture, the communities that support local teams, be they professional teams, be they amateur teams, be they youth teams. I'm with you. I think that it's really important that we engage our political and critical brains around all of these things.
Cover the Lakers. Hold
on. Let me answer that. Tom, you can call the Pacifica Radio Archives and you can get about a 50-minute interview I did with Phil Jackson.
No, I'm talking about the buildup of this year of the game, and you didn't cover any of this the way you've covered this.
Well, because I think you can go to any major sports media and get the Lakers. Coverage. I think the fact is that soccer is still relatively underreported, and that's why KPFK does this. Hopefully, it'll happen in more places.
Yeah, thank you so much for your call, Tom. And it's tricky to do the kind of bring up a lot of the themes that we're bringing up on this World Cup show with the NBA. One of the things we're doing is we're bringing up the politics and social realities of a lot of the nations that people otherwise don't know about. So much through the prism of the World Cup, and that would be difficult with San Antonio. And of course, we did a lot with Phoenix this year with the Lakers. We had a lot of coverage on the Lakers.
Sons.
We sure did, right? And we were actually pretty appalled at Phil Jackson's take on that. Most of the people around here. I want to welcome Habu from Wisconsin, calling on line three, folks. Welcome to the People's Game.
Good evening, and thank you. And I've become a real fan of your People's Game. Just a couple of points.
Mm.
Just my humble opinion. What was said just before the call-in about the nuances of this game, and that in itself is so profound, and I think it will never take hold in root in America, because for us everything is kind of, four downs, you move up or down. There's nothing subtle about it, And maybe basketball to some extent, but the other sports, it's very cut and dry, so to speak. And that's why people enjoy it, because we, in American culture, because, we want some tangible, definable outcomes.
Right.
Whereas soccer, and the other thing, very quickly, it seems that I think the American psyche is, I'm an American, you've got to be big, ugly, dumb, and fat to be athletic, and that's not the case. And it's either or, either football or soccer, but you can't have both of them, And we should embrace it more openly, because it is such a fluid game, and it is what it is. art for art's sake.
Right. Yeah, I would ask that we resist the mass media, and especially the conservative media's desire that we imagine that gridiron football and soccer can't exist at the same time in the same world. I think that's actually a false dichotomy, and it's just not true. And I'm part of a small but growing community of people who think that gridiron's on its way out anyway, so we're not even really worried about it. But I also
wanted to give you an example. No sooner than the USA was out, the ESPN talking head said, okay, I'm not going to be watching the rest of the games, notwithstanding that the better teams were going to be playing, better football was going to be seen, and so they automatically threw water on the, they are the talking heads for people who are looking at this or listening to this.
Yeah.
No, that's a fair comment.
Yes.
Thank you so much, Habu. We want to fly through the remaining phone. Well, we're not going to get to all of them. We have so many calls here. But quickly, we only have a minute left per phone call to John from Anaheim. Welcome to the People's Game, John.
So, hi, Joe. Good evening to everyone. The comment I want to make about the German performance, if you look at the match that they played against Argentina and look at their performance, compare it to today's match, you're like looking at a whole different team. I'm just surprised and shocked at the performance level.
We were talking about the inconsistency of this team. I think a lot of it has to do with their youth. And when they're low, just had a conversation to the media 2 days ago where he talked about this how strict his strategy is, dividing the field in 18 equal rectangles. So obviously they go against a team with a different strategy and they don't do as well.
There were some very lonely rectangles out
there. There were.
Yeah.
I do want to point out, because I mentioned that there's been this discussion in the English media, it's really picked up in the past few days again, about whether football is sort of socialist in spirit. The great English football player John Barnes said as much. And I just we won't have time to cover it today, but there's an article called Football's Debt to Socialism by Simon Hatton Stone. I like the article. It's on theguardian.co.uk. Football's Debt to Socialism. I know KPFK listeners, many would love to check that out. Majid or Mayad in Pasadena, welcome to the People's Game.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
I just want to thank you. Your program is excellent, because of the draft. I started getting to the football at 66 Wembley. I'm almost 2 years shy of 60 years old. Johan Cruyff was unbelievable, Rep and Neskens, the three of them.
Right.
My buddy was the goalkeeper who defended Iran in Mendoza, and we were happy to lose 3-0 because they were that powerful. They lost in Germany, against Germany in 74 for the World Cup. They lost in Argentina, against Argentina. Netherlands is a powerful team. But my remark is more for what the lady said that was interesting, about what Zidane did in the last World Cup. And I had a discussion with my brother-in-law. He's a lawyer. He doesn't understand that they attacked so much to Zidane, but everybody forget about the guy who provoked him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That really upset me. Like, okay, Zidane was wrong, but how about that guy?
Yeah. Well, you know, there was a really interesting article about Materazzi that he's not watching this World Cup. He's still every day, he says he's haunted by his own actions.
You know where he is?
Yeah, he's in a camper somewhere in California.
Yeah, he's in Los Angeles, and someone I know actually just ran into him in a park in Santa
you
Monica.
You gotta be kidding me.
No,
I swear to God, the guy is in Los Angeles. So that's a secret about Los Angeles, is some of the world's most famous footballers enjoy coming here on vacation because they don't get the same kind of media paparazzi thing that
or
they get elsewhere.
Or playing for the Galaxy.
And we have to wrap it up. Thank you for all the calls, and thank you, Majid and Pasadena, for that comment. And sorry to the people we didn't get to. This is the People's Game, and you can check out all of our previous broadcasts at www.thepeoplesgame.org. You can also find links to that at kpfk.org. I'm Alan Minsky.
I'm Jennifer Doyle.
I'm Pablo Morales.
I'm Tony Presedo.
And we're going to be on tomorrow at 11 p.m. with a bilingual Football Popular show, 11 p.m. We're going to be back with the next on-air installment of the People's Game, 7 p.m. on Friday. And by the way, folks, we're going to be on 9 a.m. Sunday, just a couple hours before the World Cup final.